Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode for the duration of today's conference. Please be advised this call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ann Evans. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Anthony. Good afternoon. I'm Ann Evans from the Connecticut Office of the U.S. Department of Commerce. Thank you for joining us today. We've got a good crowd on the call. Within the next 2 days, you will receive from me the recording of this call so you can listen again if you want to pick up anything. And also on that email, I will be sending you contacts at SBA and at Treasury if you have any questions on the program. I'd like to introduce to begin the call and introduce Ian Steff, who is the Assistant Secretary for Global Markets at the U.S. Department of Commerce. Ian will be saying a few words and then introduce the SBA and Treasury speakers. Welcome, Ian.
Well, thank you, Ann, and thanks for your incredible leadership in the field. I very much also appreciate our partners with the Department of Treasury and the Small Business Administration for joining here today and bringing information on these really important and timely programs for small and medium-sized businesses, in particular the building contractors and trade associations participating in this call. As you all know, the folks on this call and our contractors and our construction workers and others providing for our facilities and highways around the country are providing the much-needed infrastructure to enable our thousands and thousands of exporters around the country to continue to conduct business, to keep the lights on. And I want to applaud everyone for your ongoing work and certainly for your engagement with our team. As Assistant Secretary for Global Markets and Head of the United States and Foreign Commercial Service, I have the privilege of overseeing staff in more than 70 countries around the world and 100 U.S. cities. These trade and investment professionals really work for you. I say that it's a team that works, it's a team that chooses to compete, and a team that delivers day in and day out, and deliver they have in these difficult times. We are working with the SBA and Treasury and others to reach out to USA businesses, not just exporters, but all of these SMEs that, again, keep our supply chains in operation and continue to ensure the economy continues to recover. There are companies on this call that really work to not only engage with our services communities, our exporters, but they're also working with the International Trade Administration's Commercial Service. We hope to expand your business globally, and certainly for those of you who are operating internationally, we have four main pillars within the International Trade Administration, several of which are very applicable to you, and all of which have seen a reduction in fees associated with those services that OMB typically mandates that we employ. So now is a great time to engage with Ann and our team across the country should you be wishing to expand your business globally, including for those of you who are competing abroad for foreign contracts. We're happy to weigh in with foreign governments through our advocacy program to ensure that your bids on these RFPs are fully considered by foreign governments offering tenders. So that may be something that you'd like to look into with Ann and the team as well. I know many of you contractors have designed, built, and maintained facilities that house the tens of thousands of exporters that we engage with annually. I want to thank you. Our worldwide trade professionals, in addition to the advocacy pillar mentioned, also focus on the trade and export promotion opportunities for companies in these markets that we're operating in. We're removing trade barriers as you find them These could be standards issues, regulatory issues, customs issues. You're trying to get equipment in and out of destinations. The U.S. and Foreign Commercial Service is your one-stop shop, and we encourage you to look at that. We also work and we coordinate the U.S. government's approach to inward-bound investment in terms of foreign direct investment, greenfield investment happening in the U.S. Through our Select USA program, which is a year-round program. There are many ways to leverage our global network to get deals done, even when you may not be able to travel to these markets. Our teams have really developed innovative and creative avenues. We continue to engage through our virtual platforms. Perhaps many of you have participated in those platforms, and I'll tell you they're working around the clock to engage with you and your suppliers and your customers. To reach your local U.S. Export Assistance Center and explore our programs and services, please visit trade.gov. Again, that's trade.gov. And let us help you take your business on the course of expanding in global markets that we're operating in. I know this has been a challenging time for all of us, adapting to new realities and shifting priorities. But there is one thing for certain, and that is that this team that I have the privilege to work with is working for you, and they will continue to do so as you promote competitiveness, create jobs, and encourage and foster additional investment in the United States. Today's call will include the SBA Paycheck Protection Program update from Wendell Davis, who is the Regional Administrator for New England, to brief us on the new developments relating to CARES Main Street program that will continue to provide liquidity to SMEs. And then we will also turn to Adam Larrick, my friend at the Treasury Department, who is the counselor to the Secretary of Treasury, Mnuchin. Welcome, Wendell, and addition all of our other individuals on the call today. And I'll turn it back to Ann, and then we welcome Wendell's remarks.
Okay, thank you very much, Ian. Okay, Wendell, PPP update.
Ready to go. Thank you, Ian and Ann, for that introduction, and thank you, Ann, for pulling this all together and your focus on helping the construction industry. That's been longstanding, so this is a natural for you to spearhead pulling this together. You know, these are important conversations in making folks aware of the various federal programs that exist to help businesses get through. You know, these difficult times is the goal of everyone on this panel. You know, and in looking through the registration this morning, I do want to give a special shout-out to the firms joining us from Puerto Rico. You know, we had a number of firms register from there, and it's great to see that our outreach this afternoon extends beyond the continental United States. Before we get to the details on the Main Street USA program, which we're highlighting today, let me just highlight a couple of things about the SBA's PPP program and the overall federal response to date. You know, number one, over $500 billion over the last 12 to 16 weeks have hit the balance sheets of businesses across America. You know, when you stop and think about that, that's an astounding, breathtaking number. You know, the construction industry was the third largest recipient of PPP loans, and that's just over $65 billion. PPP has helped over 500,000 construction firms across our nation. When you look at the overall federal response to the economic crisis caused by COVID, you know, while the impact of COVID has been unprecedented, and that's probably, you know, sometimes that seems like it's an overused term, but when you really think what we've gone through, that is not overused. It truly was unprecedented. You know, this administration's response, you know, with the leadership of President Trump has been equally unprecedented. When you think about what we just went through over the spring and the summer, when you add up the PPP program, the increased unemployment benefits, that $600 per week that was added to the state's unemployment benefits, and when you add in the stimulus checks and programs like the Main Street USA program, the Defense Production Act, you know, this administration has provided access to an unprecedented level of capital. You know, my view, whenever I talk about some of the programs that, you know, we're talking about today, you know, perspective is so important. And when you think about the last economic crisis that we faced as a country, it was that 08-09 economic crisis. And if you recall then, you know, the main federal program at the time was the TARP program, you know, the Troubled Asset Relief Program. You know, I was just listening to a morning business talk show, television show just the other day, and they mentioned that it took almost 13 months for the government to roll out that program. And that program represented about 6% of GDP. The current response to COVID-19 was done in weeks, and it was robust. Secretary Mnuchin just mentioned the other day that at that time it was 20% of GDP. You know, this administration's response has stabilized our economy, and it saved innumerable businesses across our nation. You know, there's clearly still work to do, and that's why we all are holding these industry-specific outreach events and highlighting new programs. You know, for our part, the SBA, we still have $128 billion left in the PPP program, and we're awaiting further authorizations from Congress with respect to that remaining amount. Until we get that authorization, though, right now we are focused on forgiveness, and companies and lenders are submitting applications as we speak. The SBA opened up its a portal for forgiveness of PPP loans August 10th or 11th. And we're expecting that the lion's share of those loans, with the new rules and the flexibility around those rules, we're expecting that the lion's share of those loans will be forgiven and will be ultimately tantamount to a grant for most companies. The SBA has done one great thing with respect to forgiveness. They recently created a one-pager application for forgiveness that most companies will be able to utilize. And I urge everybody that process, you got a PPP loan and you're looking to move forward for the forgiveness of that loan, go to SBA.gov and you can see guidance on that. You can see the applications that are out there, or you can reach out to your lender and your lender can help you with that. The second point and final point, you know, the SBA also has approximately $170 billion worth of EIDL authority. EIDL is the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program that the SBA administers. You know, these are long-term, 25-year working capital loans with a low fixed interest rate. If anyone on this call is looking for a long-term working capital loan, please reach out to me after this call. I'll be happy to discuss that EIDL program with you on a one-on-one basis. The Main Street USA program, which we are highlighting today, it is a newer program and in many ways fills gaps in the reach of the SBA programs. Adam, I'm anxious to learn more about the Main Street USA program and how it can help businesses across our nation like the PPP program has. And with that, Adam, I'll turn the program over to Adam Larrick, who is counselor to the Secretary of the United States Department of Treasury, for an introduction of the Main Street USA program. Adam, it's all yours.
Adam, are you on mute?
Adam, double check if you're on mute or maybe it's a star 6 on your phone. And if you want, we can move over to Scott, and Adam can kind of give the overview after Scott's presentation.
That'll work. Right. That'll work. Sorry, everybody. Technology is still not perfect.
All right. Well, I'm Scott Straw from the Boston Federal Reserve, and we're the ones operationalizing the Main Street program. I think Adam was going to give kind of a high level. We can certainly have him give some comments at the end. But what I was intending to do is speak to a presentation that we provided to each of you And so why don't I just walk through that, if you would. And again, thank you, Anne, for inviting me to speak about this and to try and get out the information on the Main Street Lending Program, or what I'll refer to as the MFLP from time to time. And I appreciate everybody for listening in on this and your time and interest in the program. The presentation will hopefully provide a good reference point for going forward about the program if you want to kind of find out about some of the things that we've discussed. You can look back at the program. It gives also some helpful points of reference at the end that I'll touch on. So if we begin on slide 2 with today's agenda, first I'll provide an overview of the Main Street Lending Program, then I'll discuss its key terms, how to get started in the process, and then I'll provide some information on how you can get answers to questions going forward and other resources. So if we turn now to slide number 3, as you know, as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, there's a concern of the availability of credit for small and mid-sized businesses. Furthermore, the disruptions to the economic activity arising from the pandemic have heightened the need for funding for such companies. The Main Street Lending Program is intended to provide support to such for-profit businesses and nonprofit organizations that were in sound financial condition prior to the onset of the pandemic, and it's attempting to help them maintain their payroll and operations and weather the storm that they may be experiencing. The MSLP does this mainly in 2 ways. First, sharing risk that would otherwise be absorbed entirely by lenders, and secondly, in consequence of this, creating additional balance sheet capacity for those lenders to extend more loans. So those are the thrust of the program. If we turn now to slide 4, this slide provides a simple schematic overview of the Main Street Lending Program, including how borrowers, lenders, and the Federal Reserve interacts in the program. So beginning from the left, a borrower applies directly with an eligible lender for a Main Street Lending Program loan. They work together to find a suitable loan that meets their needs given the terms of the program. You can see on the right we have 5 facilities, and I'll talk more about each of these facilities and their nuance differences as we move through the presentation. If the eligible lender approves the loan, it submits the loan participation information to the Federal Reserve Special Purpose Vehicle for purchase. Special Purpose Vehicle purchases 95% of the loan and the risk. Lender retains 5% of the loan and risk. And as you can see on the right-hand side of the exhibit, the MSLP is authorized to purchase up to $600 billion in participations in eligible loans from the lenders. The program as well is funded by $75 billion of Treasury, U.S. Treasury equity from the CARES Act. So now turning to slide 5. This slide speaks to the eligible loans for the program. As I mentioned, the MSLP operates through 5 facilities, 3 for business and 2 for nonprofit organizations. Each was set up with different features designed to meet the needs of small and mid-sized businesses and nonprofits, including different minimums and maximums, loan sizes, attractive repayment terms, and I'll go over those in a moment as well. Main Street loans, I will highlight, Main Street loans are not grants and cannot be forgiven. So turning to slide 6 and 7, I'll now walk you through some of these facilities, these various facilities under Main Street and the details. So on this slide, we have a table of for-profit businesses. This provides a nice summary of the similarities and differences between each of the facilities for for-profit businesses. There are three such facilities: the new loan facility, the priority loan facility, and the expanded loan facility. And there, you can see those in columns 2, 3, and 4, respectively. And just to highlight some of the terms, all three facilities have five-year loan terms. The interest rate for all the facilities is 1 or 3 month LIBOR plus 300 basis points. Principal is deferred for 2 years. Interest is deferred for 1 year. As I said earlier, the special purpose vehicle purchases 95% regardless of the facility, and prepayment is allowed without penalty. So those are the similarities. If I shift a little bit and highlight some of the uniquenesses of each of the facilities, I'll touch on a couple. So looking at the loan size row, the new loan facility has a minimum loan size of $250,000 and a maximum of $35 million per loan, per borrower. The priority loan facility also has a minimum loan size of $250,000, but a maximum of $50 million. Another nuance of this facility is that the proceeds can be used to refinance existing debt that is outstanding and owed to a lender other than the eligible lender that originates the MSPLF loan and the eligible lender's affiliates. The expanded loan facility allows eligible lenders to increase the size of an existing loan that they have with the borrower with a new tranche, a new incremental tranche of funding. The expanded facility has a minimum and maximum loan sizes of $10 million and $300 million. It is expected that this facility sort of is structured and catered for more sophisticated borrowers than syndicated loan sector. So per the leverage requirements under the new loan facility, the ratio of a borrower's outstanding debt cannot exceed 4 times its 2019 adjusted EBITDA. So we're looking back historically to try and assess the level of borrowing kind of in a stabilized pre-COVID lens. The ratio is 6 times that 2019 adjusted EBITDA for the priority and expanded loan facilities. So those facilities take on a little bit more risk, and because of that, they have different collateral requirements, which are detailed in the FAQs, and I'll touch on in a moment. So turning to slide 7. Is a similar grid for nonprofit organizations. I'll point out here there are two facilities, the new loan facility and the expanded loan facility. You will see a lot of similarities with the corresponding facilities that we just went over in the for-profit businesses. Same terms, five-year term, interest rate 1 or 3 month LIBOR plus 300 basis points. Principal and interest is deferred for 2 and 1 years, respectively, same minimum and maximum as the corresponding MSLP for-profit business programs. There are important points of differences that I wanted to point out. One worth highlighting is the maximum loan is a function of average 2019 quarterly revenues as opposed to that debt to EBITDA that we spoke about in profit business. Now let us discuss on slide 8 the eligible lenders that can provide access to the program. So who is eligible to make loans under the MSLP? This slide details the requirements to be an eligible lender, and these include U.S. federally insured depository institutions, including banks, savings associations, and credit unions, U.S. bank holding companies and savings and loan holding companies, U.S. branches, or agencies of foreign banks, U.S. intermediate holding companies of foreign banking organizations, and any U.S. subsidiary of any of the above-mentioned institutions. So we have hundreds of lenders that have registered, including lenders from all of the 50 states. And again, I'll give a little bit more information on how to find those lenders toward the end. So shifting to slide number 9 for a moment. On slide number 9, we will discuss who can borrow under this facility. Let me highlight just a few of the requirements, beginning with the facilities for for-profit businesses. The business must be created or organized in the United States or under the laws of the United States with significant operations in and a majority of its employees based in the United States. The business must not be defined as an ineligible business. And again, we've got references for that, for one to look at those definitions. And it's very similar to the PPP structure. The business must have up to 15,000 employees or up to $5 billion in 2019 annual revenues. And there is guidance on that as well. Turning to the second column for nonprofit organizations, the eligible borrower must be a U.S. tax-exempt nonprofit or veterans organization, C3 or C19, and it must have been in uninterrupted operation since January 1, 2015. Also, employee and revenue requirements apply. The organization must have at least 10 employees. An endowment less than $3 billion, again, must not be ineligible. Moving to slides 10 and 11, we discuss that borrowers are required to complete certain covenants and certifications for the program. Some of these covenants are highlighted here on slide 10, including that the borrower may only participate in one MSLP facility and may not also participate in the primary market corporate credit facility or the municipal liquidity facility. We've got, you know, SEP funds available for each of these facilities and don't want, and particularly very large firms, to be tapping all of the facilities and competing with the different focal points that we have for each of these facilities. So that's kind of a little bit of the background on that. Borrowers that receive PPP or EIDL loans may participate in the MSLP if they meet the eligibility requirements. So I'll stress that point. It's worth pointing out. And we just heard a little bit about those programs. So if we move to slide number 11, there's a little bit about the prohibitions. On this slide, I'll touch on some of that. MSLP's goal is to provide funding to borrowers that need incremental funding. So there are certifications against simply paying down existing debt, for example. The borrowers can make payments that are mandatory and due in normal course of business usage on lines of credit. This point is something that we get a lot of questions about. So again, I tried to highlight that. We do have some there is some ability to do refinancing or refinancing of debt that isn't with the existing lender. We didn't want to just create a vehicle that ended up refinancing all of the banks and their exposure and simply serve that purpose without getting the funds to get out, without getting incremental funds to the industries that need it. And so that's kind of the governor that we've put on that. So we again don't want firms to just pay off their debt and advantage those firms that can do that. We want to make sure that we're getting it to firms that actually need that funding. That said, we fully expect that if they have already existing loans that have mandatory and due and normal course of usage on lines of credit, that is fair for continuing to make those payments. And then there's the CARES Act restrictions on compensation, capital distributions, and equity repurchases also apply. And again, there's guidance in the FAQs on that. So if we move to slide number 12, as with any loan, lenders need certain information from borrowers at the time of application and periodically throughout the life of the loan. They'll need general identification information, obviously, on the borrower, financial data on the borrower, and collateral information should it be a collateralized loan. Again, that information is provided in the program FAQs. And so moving to slide number 13, slide number 13 provides an overview of getting started. Interested businesses and organizations should start by reviewing the program requirements. So at a high level, they are provided in the term sheets. And then there are detailed explanations in the FAQs for each of the programs that provide more information beyond what's in the term sheets. Borrowers must complete the required program documentation as well as the lender's loan documentation. Lenders will apply their own underwriting standards and determine whether borrowers are approved for a Main Street loan. But importantly, eligible lenders should recognize the uncertainty in today's environment, today's economy, and eligible lenders are encouraged to work with the borrowers affected by the pandemic. Then lenders will submit the participation to the Federal Reserve SPV for purchase, and that's really kind of the flow of the process. I think if we turn now to questions, and then I will touch on a few remaining items on more information. So if I hand it over, I think we had a couple of questions lined up that we were going to cover for each of the programs.
And before we get to those questions, did Adam jump back on?
Yes, Adam is back. Adam had a collapse in technological skill a few minutes ago, and I had to come back on. Well, first of all, Scott did a phenomenal job. I heard 90% of what he said explaining the program. I would just sort of add a little from sort of going over what sort of the purpose and the objectives of Main Street are. Main Street's goal, and it's certainly the most complex of any of the programs that we've set up with the Federal Reserve in terms of trying to provide funding to small and medium-sized companies that typically do not do bond issues, typically do not have credit ratings. But the goal is a very simple one. It's to provide bridge financing to companies that were in sound financial condition before the crisis, that have been adversely affected by the crisis, but to help them get to the other side to when the economy recovers and their business returns to normal. Main Street is not in the business of competing with the banks in the sense that companies that banks are happy to lend to or have other sources of private sector financing, we're delighted. We're not there to try to take loans away from the banks or be an alternative source of funding to borrowers that have access to credit. On the other hand, Main Street is also not in the business of lending to companies that were in distress before the crisis either. That's why we set the credit metrics on Main Street, as Scott said, based on 2019 earnings and based on credit risk classification of the borrowers in December 2019. So the idea is that these were sound, solvent companies before the crisis, but now need help to get to survive until the economy returns. As Scott said, the goal is not to basically refinance the banking system. The goal is to provide new credit to businesses to help them through the crisis, and that's why there are those restrictions on the ability to refinance loans using Main Street loans. Scott went through the terms very carefully, and I think you have his PowerPoint presentation, and the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston has an excellent website where you can see all the frequently asked questions, you can go through all the presentations, and you can also submit questions. And the Federal Reserve is very responsive and comes back very quickly. Leaving that, let me say that the program is up and running. It'll be going over $1 billion very shortly. We have borrowers of all sizes that are taking it, all sizes within the small and medium-sized range. They're taking up loans. The loans have ranged in size from about $1 million up to, I think the largest loan done today is $50 million. Scott, is that right?
So far? I think that's right. That's my recollection.
Yes. We have some much larger loans that are coming through the facility. There are some banks, we have, as Scott said, there are banks in all 50 states that are taking loans. There are 180 banks that are taking loans that have announced publicly they will take loans from new customers. Many banks will take loans from new customers but are not on the Federal Reserve's website. And the Federal Reserve is very helpful in helping the banks and borrowers go through the process of the documentation and the qualifications. At that, I think what I'll do is I'll leave it for the questions that Scott and I can try to answer to help people go through the Main Street program.
Thank you, Adam, for that summary. I think it's critically important to understand kind of that 35,000-foot level because it makes the slides make so much more sense, and you understand why some of the program details are in there when you understand what the purpose of the program is. But turning it over to Q&A, our first question comes from Dennis Kavanaugh, who is the construction lead for the law firm of Robinson & Cole. Dennis, is that you?
Yeah, that is. Thanks very much. And before I ask the question, I wanted to just give a shout-out and thank you for organizing this program. It's certainly very, very important to those in the construction industry as they are always in need of working capital and lines of credit, as you know, in their businesses. So thank you for doing this. My question is that many companies and firms in the construction industry, as you know, are structured where either the firm or the company is occupying physical space and paying rent to a related individual or entity. And question is, are the rent payments to that related party eligible for loan forgiveness under the Main Street program?
Well, so Dennis, when I hear loan forgiveness, is it the PPP program?
Yeah, under the Main Street.
There's no debt forgiveness in Main Street. Main Street is a loan program. It's not a grant program, and forgiveness is not contemplated on any Main Street loans.
Okay. Yeah, how about under the PPP?
Yeah, with respect to PPP, the quick answer is yes, Dennis. As always, though, there's always conditions to that. So if you're making a rental payment to a related party, and I do understand there's a lot of structures that are out there that that have that type of arrangement, that rental amount, that lease amount is forgivable, which is great news. And that's part of that flexibility. But the amount of the loan forgiveness requested for that lease or rental payment as it's related to the related party, it can be no more than the amount of mortgage interest owned on the property during the covered period that is attributable to the space being rented by the business. So it's kind of a mouthful. The second condition is the lease and the mortgage had to have been entered into prior to February 15th, which is kind of the trigger date for eligibility for the PPP loans. So it's somewhat nuanced. There's some technical language in there. If anybody is in that situation, they want more clarity, again, reach out to me or Ann or anybody on the call, and we'll make sure we get you the clarity that you need. Thanks, Dennis, for that question. The second question is going to be for either Adam or Scott or Adam and Scott. Randy, did you jump on the call, Randy Norden? We had a question from Randy Norden, who is the Federal Programs Director, National Rural Water Association. And Adam and Scott, the question was, you know, what is the status? And Scott, you had mentioned eligibility of certain nonprofits. And what is the status, and is there any discussion around making nonprofits, specifically C-12s, which I believe are cooperations, are cooperatives like Rural Water Associations? Those are C-12s and also C-6s. Any discussion about C-6s, which are the Chamber of Commerce and other industry associations like that?
Maybe I'll start with that, and then Adam can add some color as well. So the set of nonprofit organizations eligible for the Main Street program includes those described in sections 501c3 and 501c19 of the Internal Revenue Code. This approach is aligned with the approach taken by the SBA and the PPP program. The term sheet does provide that other forms of organization may be considered for inclusion in the definition of nonprofit organizations. We're currently focused on operationalizing the program under the current eligibility criteria, but we will continue to evaluate the program over time. And so for hearing from these entities, it's certainly worthwhile to us to get that color. I don't know if Adam wants to add anything.
No, I think that's fine, Scott. I think you did a good job on that.
All right, and now for our remaining questions, three or four questions, we have Mike Phillips, who is the president of the National Ready Mixed Concrete Association. Mike, are you on the call?
I am.
All right, Mike, fire away.
Thank you. Appreciate that. A really excellent job, very informative program so far. Listen, as a little bit of a backdrop, I want to tell you a little bit about the National Ready Mix Concrete Association. We represent over 425 small, medium, and large ready mix concrete producers across the country. Those companies represent well over 50% of the concrete production in the U.S., and their work has been deemed as an essential business during this COVID crisis. I do have two questions. Can you give us some thoughts as to how a business would know if the Main Street Lending Program is right for them, and perhaps more importantly, what to take into account when evaluating which lending facility is most appropriate? And then secondly, I want to make sure our members are aware of any rules or strings attached to participating in these programs. And once again, thank you.
Okay. Well, Scott, let me take a first stab at it. First, in terms of strings attached, I wouldn't call them strings. The Congress set certain very specific restrictions on lending programs or aid programs under the CARES Act that relate to executive compensation, dividends, stock repurchases. And the rationale is that a borrower that is seeking basically assistance from the U.S. taxpayer should in return not be using funds to pay dividends to its shareholders or pay large bonuses to its executives or be buying back their shares while they are still using the Main Street loan. 12 months after the loan is repaid, those restrictions disappear, but those restrictions are in place during the life of the loan plus 12 months. In terms of which facility is the best facility for a company, first, whether Main Street is appropriate for a company or not, that depends on whether the company has access to its normal sources of funding in the private sector in the markets. If their bank is happy to lend to them on good terms, then they should go to their bank and not come through the Main Street program. If, on the other hand, they are having difficulty obtaining funding on reasonable terms, they should consider the Main Street program. In terms of which facility is the best, it depends on their needs and it depends on their financial situation. There are basically three facilities. There are three facilities for businesses. One is the expanded loan facility, where in that case, basically the Main Street loan is just an add-on extra tranche, an extra part of an existing loan that the borrower has with its existing bank. And there, you basically, your Main Street loan just slides in alongside the existing loan. The other two facilities, the new loan facility is a facility where it's a separate loan from any existing loans the borrower may have. And in that case, that loan facility can be unsecured. That loan can be unsecured. The other Main Street loans need to be secured if the other debt of the borrower is secured. But in the Main Street new loan facility, if a borrower has debt that's secured by its other assets, it can still come and get a Main Street loan that would be unsecured. The priority loan facility is basically for new loans that from the bank, but where there you also have to be pari passu, and if the bank loan is secured, you have to have the same security for the Main Street loan. And those are sort of the differences. The terms in terms of interest rate, maturity, amortization are all the same across the facilities. The other differences are the maximums. The new loan facility has a maximum of $35 million, the priority facility of $50 million, and the expanded loan facility of $300 million.
That was, those were the high points I would have touched on. I guess if I add one other, again, as Adam said, I wouldn't want to call them strings. Truly, the goal is for us to get funds out to the economy and the firms that drive that growth. But that said, I probably would as well point out that there are some fees in the program for various reasons. We need to leverage the lenders to partner with us for this program. So while we need to make the interest rate reasonable for borrowers and provide that P&I deferral, those deferral features, we also need to provide some incentive for the banks to participate. So there are certain allowable fees associated, and they're detailed in the term sheets, but I just point that out to be aware of that. Those fees can be financed in the program.
Thanks, Adam and Scott. We do have a follow-up question to what part of one of the answers, and it's a question for clarification with respect to distributions. In it's specific to subchapter S corporations. Are the blanket generic restrictions also applicable to a subchapter S? Oftentimes a subchapter S will use distributions for basic compensation. Is there any consideration of that or any guidance or clarification on that?
There is. Subchapter S, there is guidance that subchapter S corporations and other tax pass-through entities can pay dividends or the equivalent, but they're limited to only one use, which is to pay the taxes due by the owner, the shareholder, so to speak, in respect of that income. In essence, you can pass through in simplest form. A subchapter S corporation can make dividend distributions to a shareholder, but only to the extent that that shareholder has tax liabilities due to the income on that from that subchapter S corporation. That's the one allowance. But the dividends cannot be used for just regular compensation or any other type of payment.
All right, Adam, perfect. I think that answers the question because there was a reference in that question to tax payments. So perfect. All right, folks, I'm very mindful of this day and age. We are all on webinars and phone calls all day long, and I do have one edict in my region that all calls are less than 1 hour now, because I've done so many of these things. So being respectful of everybody's time on the call, I do want to thank Commerce. I do want to thank Treasury. I do want to thank the Bank of Boston. And most of all, I want to thank all of the companies jumping on this call for your time. And if there's any follow-up questions or any other concerns, or if anybody out there wants us to do more outreach in your area, let us know, and we'd be happy to jump on a call and do whatever we can. Thank you, everyone, and enjoy the rest of the day, and then make it a fruitful day. Take care. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
That concludes today's call. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time. Speakers, allow a moment of silence and stand by for your post-conference.